Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is comics writer, television writer, and storyteller provocateur, Brandon Easton. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Not too bad. My good friend, you are working on Vampire Hunter D, a graphic novel and a TV pilot, and I'm so jealous and so thrilled for you. We're here to talk Vampire Hunter D. How's that?
Absolutely fine. That's one of my favorite topics, so we're going to have a good time with that one.
Oh, excellent. Now, for people who aren't aware, Vampire Hunter D is a classic Japanese anime. I think I first saw it in the late 80s, but it's from earlier than that.
Right. It's a series of novels by the writer Hideki Kikuchi. He had been writing, I don't remember exactly when the very first novel was released, but definitely in the early 80s, and it took off, did very, very well. And from there, they did an animated film that came out, I believe, in 1985 in Japan, and then hit the U.S. a little bit later. So it's a very, 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 very deeply steeped franchise in lore. It's been around for a very long time. There have been two animated versions. I'm trying to remember. I think there's 26 novels in the main novel series. There's been a lot of audio dramas, mangas, like little short stories in Japanese publications over the years. There's even been some unreleased short stories, that one of which got translated into the comic book, the graphic novel series that you know I've been writing, you know. And it's just been a very, very, very powerful franchise that introduced a lot of people to anime back in the old days. And for all intents and purposes, you know, it's been desperately needing a return. And I just feel like this is the time of, you know, for Vampire Hunter D, because Castlevania popped up, you know, on Netflix,
right.
And everybody who's seen it, almost everybody to a T, says the exact same thing, that it owes so much to Vampire Hunter D. So I think now is a great time. I mean, the vampire thing has been kind of cold for a while, and it would be a perfect time to come back, because just like zombies were, you know, pardon the pun, a dead franchise for quite some time before Walking Dead, you know, vampires have been kind of dormant since the Twilight, you know, franchise, you know, came and went. So I think this is a time. I mean, this is a great horror, sci-fi, fantasy hybrid that, quite frankly, is one of the most unique properties ever created. And I'm very pleased and honored to be, you know, given the responsibility of turning it into a TV pilot. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm not sure where it was where I came across it, but I'm 98% sure that I saw this after I had seen Akira. So it was probably like 89 or 90 when I saw Vampire Hunter D, Vampire Princess Miyu. And like,
yes,
both of those blew my mind at the time. Both of those blew my mind. And just hearing that, I didn't know until probably about 5 years ago just how vast the D novels were. I'm like, wait, there's how much more of this? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to catch up, but I'll see if there's some comics, some manga I can catch up on. And then last year, during my excursion into California, you just kind of just drop, oh, yeah, I'm working on a graphic novel, Vampire Hunter D. I'm like, wait, what?
Wow.
So tell me more about the story that you are adapting to the graphic novel, and then we'll get to the other good news.
Sure. Okay. So I'm doing an adaptation of two novels called Mysterious Journey to the North Sea, Part 1 and Part 2. The story deals with, and if you read the novels, it's not really a spoiler, a young lady who ends up dead at some point, but before she passes away, she gives D a mysterious little black orb. It's about a little bit larger than your standard marble size. And for some reason, a bunch of other vampires, other hunters, mutants, gang leaders, and magicians, literal sorcerers, actual sorcerers, want that black pearl, the black orb. And right before the young lady dies, she says to Dee, make sure you get this to my sister. And they live on a city at the edge of the North Sea, which in the story and in Vampire Hunter D universe, the North Sea is, I don't want to say bewitched or cursed, but in the Vampire Hunter D universe, the vampires have been also called the nobility, but the vampires have been conducting all kinds of genetic experiments for generations on the flora and fauna of Earth, as well as human beings. So the North Sea is riddled with unspeakable horrors that right beneath the surface that the vampire nobility has dumped into the sea and conducted their experiments. And it's really, really cold up there. I mean, abnormally cold. So the humans who live in the cities or in the ports along the North Sea are tough. They're fishermen, longshoremen types. And there's also a vampire castle on the other edge of the North Sea, where bordering the town where all the humans live. So there's a story there, basically almost like an Odyssey, Ulysses-type story, where someone has to get object to someplace else or return to someplace else. And it's everything that happens along the way, which becomes ultimately a chase story through, you know, the North Sea region and what Dee has to deal with, and also uncovering the truth of what that black pearl or black orb actually is. So that's the basic story, what we're dealing with.
So you're adapting both volume one and volume two?
Well, the thing is, the way that the books are structured, there's a lot of story in each book because Kikuchi writes extremely cinematically. So I've taken a portion of events in the first book. I haven't touched the second book in the pilot, but there's definitely a wider net being cast from the events of the first novel in the pilot. So I'm setting up all the main players and also setting up the emotional connection, which is everything, because Vampire Hunter D stories ultimately are about emotion and how emotion can be either destructive or beneficial to not only humans, but also to the vampires and the mutants and all the other assorted, you know, miscreants out there in that universe. So, I'm adapting those two, but only the first book, major elements of the first book end up in the pilot.
Okay, and that segues us to the other good news. You're writing the pilot for this to be on TV somewhere.
Right, of course. Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah, I've been hired by Unified Pictures, who are in conjunction with Digital Frontier, which is a Japanese CGI 3D animation studio. And they've done, like, the new Tekken animation, and they've done, I mean, just a ton of stuff lately that's just been gorgeous. If you look up Digital Frontier, you'll see, like, trailers for all the stuff they've ever worked on. Just beautiful work. And I don't know what Vampire Hunter D is actually going to look like, but I have no doubt that it's going to be astonishing because the conceptual designer is amazing. And some of the stuff that his name is Christopher Shai. Some of the stuff that Christopher Shai has already done has ended up in the supplemental pages of the issue one of the Vampire Hunter D comic book. So folks can take a look at some of that stuff, you know, online. If you look up Christopher Shai and Vampire Hunter D, you will see some astonishing designs that, you know, in my mind, will probably end up looking sort of like what the show looks like.
Nice. And yeah, I know this news only just came out this week, which is why I was literally doing a Snoopy dance in my rec room going, yay, I can talk about it now.
Yeah, so could I. You know, I've been on a gag order for quite some time. So I'm very happy to be able to talk about it and, you know, share the news because I've been very excited about it. And it's just been a major, major moment in my creative life, and I'm very much enjoying everything about this.
As a fan of Vampire Hunter D, did you have to make any changes to adapt this story from the novel to both comic and television script?
As a fan, see, it's tough for me to answer because Vampire Hunter D is one of those properties that has always kind of just been like right outside of either everybody's attention or right outside of just being just about to be brought back. I mean, if you do any research on it, you'll see that there's been many, many attempts to bring Vampire Hunter D back to the US market or North American market, and there's been a few things holding that up. Now that that's stuff's kind of out of the way, it's been a very, very, very interesting partnership between the, you know, the American creators and the Japanese side. So for me as a creator and as a fan, I haven't really had to change my mentality too much. But as I've stated in an interview that came out in Anime News Network this week, which was the announcement, the announcement article, I'm working with Unified Pictures, Digital Frontier, as well as Hideki Kikuchi's people and himself as well, and I'm dealing with myself. So I'm dealing with more than one person, and it's really tough, I think, to write in a universe where the creator is still writing new material, and you have to be very careful not to do anything to disrupt or upset the creator. It would be akin or analogous to working with George Lucas when he still owned Lucasfilm, and you're writing a Star Wars novel that takes place during, let's say, the original trilogy, let's say Shadows of the Empire, which is the old Star Wars Legends classic story. You know, you have to be very careful because any decision you make, any character who speaks, anything that explodes, it cannot really affect anything that's currently being done with the new material. So as George Lucas was doing the prequels, you know, anybody writing a novel had to be very, 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 very careful not to disrupt or in any way infringe upon the story he wanted to tell. So looking at it from that perspective, that's what's happening right now with me. I have to be very cognizant of everything that Hideki Kikuchi is doing, and my producers, who talk to him regularly, constantly keep me abreast of what I can do and what I cannot do. And that's basically how that works right now.
How stressful is that for you as a creator? You're constrained, but you also have the freedom to tell a story that can be incorporated into the canon.
I mean, I'm not ever, and I say this, and I absolutely mean it. I am never ever really frustrated by the process, because I understand wholeheartedly why things flow the way that they flow. I mean, after working in the business for a while, I do know that there are multiple factors at any given time as to why certain decisions are made and why certain decisions are not made. So for me, it's just business as usual, to be honest with you, because everything I've ever worked on, and I've worked on a lot of licensed material, a lot of IPs that I did not create. And as a result, I have to be, again, extremely cognizant of what my bosses want. I mean, it's just the way, it's just how I work on this stuff in general. You know, I mean, it's just what it is. So you work with somebody else, you got to listen to what they have to say, and you got to do what they say. Basically, they're your bosses. So I listen.
So, do you know anything about when the comics are being released and how that ties into, I guess, marketing the fact that this television series is in production and how to keep people, on the lookout for when it might show up?
Well, okay. So we just hired a brand new artist, Ryan Benjamin, who has worked with Wildstorm and DC Comics and Marvel. I mean, this guy's worked on just about almost every big title in the last 15, 20 years. He's worked on a lot of great books. Our original artist, Michael Broussard, for whatever reason, was not able to finish. I still don't know exactly what happened there. But with that being said, we brought in someone new. So originally, we had planned to do a 5-issue series and have those 5 issues released as a collected deluxe edition is going to be a soft cover, but I've been personally praying that we do a like leather bound with purple velvet hardcover. Ooh. That's been my dream, and I've been talking to my bosses about that, and they would love to do a hardcover edition that's like a super special premium edition, but it might have to be, you know, print to order, you know, because that's going to cost a whole lot to do. So we got to see how that plays out. But with that said, the new artist is moving along at a really good pace. I mean, it would be great to have the issues done by the end of 2018. But realistically, I'm guessing we might get the book, you know, the actual version in 2019. I mean, I would love it because our original goal was to have it ready for early 2018. And even a pie in the sky goal was San Diego Comic-Con 2017, but clearly that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So maybe New York Comic-Con 2019 might see the release of the book. This is just me speculating. But everybody who donated to the massively successful Kickstarter, just to let everybody know, we will be putting it out. All five issues are coming. And instead of putting them out as five single issues, we're going to put it out as a collected book so you get everything on point of sale. You're going to be in bookstores. You can get on Amazon. It's going to be on various websites. So everybody who donated, everybody who's waiting, and anybody who didn't know, there will be a new, incredibly beautiful looking Vampire Hunter D graphic novel in probably 2019, collected.
Nice. And there are people out there who specialize in doing limited edition, high-end, bound volumes. You know, if you say there's going to be only 250 copies, it'll be signed by, you know, these three people, and it'll be gorgeous. People will literally sell their children's teeth for a copy of that.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, the thing is, there will be the standard, you know, in like basic edition that'll be in every store, but we're definitely hoping to put out a super duper special hardcover purple leather bound velvet cover. That's what I'd want. That's just me, though. You know, I'm extravagant like that.
So the history of Vampire Hunter D, what was it about D that made you a fan?
Well, I mean, for me, I was stunned that there was a vampire franchise that had elements of fantasy, science fiction, and horror, and it all worked. You know, as someone who grew up not a fan of vampire stories, because, you know, I like the classic stuff, Bela Lugosi. I even like the Christopher Lee Hammer stuff. But I'm not really what I would call a vampire, you know, aficionado. I'm not someone who goes out of my way to track it down and, you know, go see a movie just because there's vampires in it. I just was stunned that Kikuchi and his creative team was able to pull off something so incredibly unique with a interesting twist on the man with no name trope, but do it with a vampire hunter who's half vampire and half human. There's so much loaded into just that basic character. And that's what grabbed me, the fact that there was such a beautiful, deep and well-constructed world. The rules that Kikuchi has created are just amazing. Anyone who reads the novels, I mean, particularly as you get further into the novels, the early ones are, you know, they're a little bit shaky at times. But as you get deeper into the third and fourth and fifth and sixth, I mean, the novels just get better and better and better. And the world gets deeper and deeper and deeper. And the action and his originality is so incredible. I can't say enough good things about the novel series. And I strongly recommend people check them out, you know.
Do you have a preference of, if you were introducing somebody to the world of Vampire Hunter D, somebody who hadn't seen the anime yet, somebody who hadn't read the manga or the novels, which two would you say, here, start here?
Well, to be absolutely honest, I would say to start, you have to read the first two books in the series. And I believe the title is, I think it's Vampire Hunter D, and the second book is called Razor of Gales. The third book is called Demon Death Chase, and Demon Death Chase was the one that was adapted into the 1999 well, I believe the year 2000, Vampire Hunter D movie called Bloodlust. Mm-hmm. So you got to read at least the very first three to get the basic concepts and all the characters. And then from there, I mean, you could watch the first movie and you'll be fine. You could watch the second movie, you'll be fine. But I feel like the meat of Vampire Hunter D, the things that'll really grab you, are all in the novels. So if you could read the first three, which are Vampire Hunter D is volume one. Volume two is called The Razor of Gales, G-A-L-E-S. And the third book is called The Demon Death Chase. If folks want to get into that, I think that would be a great place to start. And you can get these books anywhere. I mean, they're on Amazon and in the secondary market and used bookstores. And, you know, you can find them. They're out there.
Good, good. Now, have you personally introduced anybody to the world of D and they've come back and go, dude, why didn't you tell me about this before?
No, I have not, because most of my friends were already into it.
Oh.
So that, like, well, when I first, well, by the time I first discovered D, that would probably be the late 80s, very early 90s. So it's not as if, you know, I didn't know about it. And a lot of my friends who were into anime at the time, we all watched it together. Mm-hmm. And then when I was living in Boston and working for an anime company, Bloodlust got released in a theater right across the street from my job. So, and it was in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I forgot the name. I think it was the Mount Auburn Theater. I think it was that. I can't remember correctly. It's been many years. But me and my friends went to see it. So I haven't really had to introduce anybody to it. I think that there are people who I am not aware of who, because I've been enthusiastic and because of the comic, have given the property a chance. But generally speaking, that wasn't always the case. I don't feel like people were seeking out D because it's been so long since there's been anything new in terms of visual media. So I think that the comic has reactivated interest, and then the announcement of the pilot I'm working on has started to get people thinking about it too.
Nice. So you've been gifted to have everyone, like, and most of the people around you who know about D already knew about D, and then they realize,
right,
wait, Brandon is writing D? Dude.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still blown away by it. Absolutely.
Well, so what, other than D, what else are you working on, or is your focus just on the comics and the pilot right now?
Well, where do I begin with that? So, let's see. All right. Well, I'm working on some other pilots for my basic TV career. I've come up with some really cool stuff. I'm trying to get staffed for the 2018 staffing season for network or digital or cable television. I'm open to all of them. I also have been working on some other comic book material I can't talk about right now because, you know, NDAs. I've worked on a new on a Marvel animated series I can't talk about yet that'll be debuting sometime soon. I don't know when, but when that announcement's made, I'll let everybody know about that. Obviously, I finished up with Mobile Armored Strike Command at IDW, and the first and second collected volumes of the entire series are currently available. So, folks, please check that out if you get a chance. And yeah, that's about it. I mean, I've, between all that stuff, I've been pretty darn busy.
Yeah, the Mobile Armored Strike Command, when I saw the collection of those coming out, I'm like, ooh, a time for me to actually get into that. Are you working on any other sort of independent shorts? Because we talked about DDX last year, and that was fantastic. I could use some more of that.
Well, thank you. I mean, it didn't have the splash I wanted it to have. But, yeah, I mean, the reality is this. My plan is to continue to do short films and continue to do even a pilot for a web series. I have a lot of ideas. I've just got to, you know, obviously raise the funds and knock a few things out the park. But, yeah, I definitely have plans to revisit the DDX universe. I have plans to expand it. A lot of people don't know that DDX was not the film I was going to shoot. I was going to shoot a short film based on a short script of mine called Homeworld, which is a alien conspiracy UFO thriller, but with a twist that no one would have seen coming, that no one will see coming. And and it's pretty ambitious what I was trying to do visually, what I wanted to do thematically. But what wound up happening, we had some key production personnel drop out at the worst possible time. So because of that, the project didn't happen, and I had to shift gears and do DDX because we were well into pre-production on Homeworld. And when that happened, it kind of, you know, it broke my heart a little bit because Homeworld had been something that everybody, the actors, the other producers, the special effects people, everybody was ready to put this down. And when it happened, when things fell apart the way it fell apart, I was really heartbroken. But I was so far along, I had to pick up the pieces, and those pieces ended up being DDX. So, yeah, long story short, I am going to be doing more produced material of my own. I just got to make some money, you know, and find a way to finance it.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Homeworld sounds like something I would definitely want to see.
I would hope so. I hope everybody wants to see it.
Well, here's hoping you get that made and you keep things going with Vampire Hunter D. Brandon, thank you so much for your time today and for letting us share your passion for Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you for having me. I mean, it's my pleasure to do this show. And anytime you want me back, you know, feel free to reach out and I will be here.
Don't promise that too soon, because I still want to get a group together to talk about Black Panther after it's made, you know, its billion.
Hey, you know what? I mean, that sounds like a plan. And I know quite a few people who have the willingness and the time to talk about it. I was also going to say, you know, I posted a picture from the premiere of Black Panther out here in Hollywood, and the picture was filled with almost 30 or 40 black men, all of whom are either showrunners or film writers, TV writers, novelists, comic book creators. A couple of them in there have been Academy Award nominees, including Virgil Williams for Mudbound. He was in that shot. I mean, it was an amazing shot, and it went viral, the photo. And LA Magazine picked up the story. The Hollywood Reporter picked up the story. It's just been an amazing moment for all, particularly writers of color, especially African-American creators. So I know a lot of folk who would love to do that. So I would love to do it with you, and I could bring in some heavy hitters, and we could do a nice round table somehow, some way. So just let me know, and I'll be there.
Oh, yeah. I'm shooting you an email after this.
But sounds like a plan.
Yeah, I saw that photo when you tweeted it, and I retweeted it with a little tear out of coming down my eye going, oh, my God, that's beautiful.
Thank you for that. And, you know, it was beautiful. And the reaction to that has been just absolutely fantastic. I've had so many people, and literally, it is literally the most successful tweet I've ever tweeted in my entire life. I did not expect it to be what it became. I just posted it because I wanted people to see that, and especially, and this is not taking away anything away from black women and all the sisters out there who create. I just wanted to show, because it was just a bunch of us getting together, show that we exist. I think that, actually, I don't think, I know that a lot of people don't realize that black men write TV shows and movies. I know that people know of Tyler Perry. I know people know of Spike Lee. I know people know of John Singleton. And maybe to a lesser extent, people might know who Lee Daniels is, right? But I don't think people realize that there are a lot of shows that have black writers, black male writers, that there are black men who run shows in Hollywood. And beyond comedy, there's a lot of folks who are doing drama and science fiction and fantasy and horror, not named Jordan Peele. You know, no disrespect. I love Jordan Peele. But, you know, I think what happens a lot of times is that we focus on one person thinking that that one person is doing all the heavy lifting, not realizing that there's a massive network of people who don't end up on a red carpet. You know, because when you see the Golden Globes or the Oscars, everybody's caring about the actors and what they're wearing. Nobody really gives a crap about the writers, really. But the lack of acknowledgement that we exist, I think, does damage to young creators of color and young creators, period, regardless of race, class, or gender, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really important for people to see that we do create. And I know I've gotten into it over the decades with magazines, with online, the podcasts and radio shows, whatever you want to call them. I have a major problem with geek journalism in general, because geek journalism, whether you're talking about, and I'm no disrespect to them, but whether you're talking about the Nerdist, whether you're talking about IGN, whether you're talking about the many, 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 many avenues of geek information sharing, most of it is overwhelmingly white or only focus on white creators for some reason. And that bothers me to no end. So I think that putting that out there and having LA Magazine and having the Hollywood Reporter and a couple of other respectable news organizations pick that story up and circulate it willingly, that has been a major achievement of mine, a triumph. And I'm not taking credit for it. I'm just very happy that it happened. And, you know, I just think it's important that we continue to let folks know that we exist and that little children of color, and or even white kids, people, children, period, teenagers, college kids can look at this and be like, wow, I can do this too. You know, and to me, that's the most important part.
Yeah, there's a moment of resonance there when that picture just kept going and going and going. And yeah, what you're saying about just Hollywood, it extends to every industry. And there was a phenomenon that I realized when you see these, you know, every now and then you'd have it hit me when I read that Hollywood Reporter article that had Lee Daniels and Jordan Peele and John Singleton in it. I was like, oh, that's what I couldn't put my finger on it, but it's the one at a time theory.
Yep.
You know, it seems like it's like, well, there's one guy who did it, you know, be happy with that. I was like, no, there's more than one of us. There's more than one story. There's more than one way to tell a story. Once the kids start to see that we can have more than one at a time, I mean, look at sports. There's more than one LeBron, you know, there's, well, skill wise, but still there's more than one black basketball player on each team.
Right.
Why can't
right.
there be more than one screenwriter, you know, one black screenwriter in a room? Why can't there be more than one black producer on a network? There's room for everybody. The pie doesn't get smaller because somebody else has one. You share it and that spreads out. You make more.
Yeah, see, the trick is you're about to cross over into a dangerous conversation because I've gotten in trouble for talking about that publicly. But yes, there is a problem. And it's not always because there aren't people out there. It's just that sometimes some creators will try to hog all the spotlight and won't allow or acknowledge anyone else. And I'm not calling out any one particular person because everybody's circumstance, how they broke in and how they stay in is different, you know. But I do feel and have felt and still, you know, and I'll maintain for quite some time until I'm proven otherwise that there are some black folks that only want to be the only one. There are some black folks who only want to be the one that gets a camera or microphone shoved in their face or jump in front of a camera and microphone and block off other people from getting much needed exposure. That's an issue, but that's been our problem for a long time. And by our problem, I mean black folks. There are some black folks that want all the glory and all the press and be damned if anyone else doesn't make it.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I don't like that whole there can be only one. I call it the Highlander mentality. There can be only one. And there are some black people who 100% subscribe to the Highlander mentality. And they are out there and they're very popular. Some of them are very prosperous and, you know, accomplished. And I'm glad for them, but you know, you got to share the wealth. It can't all be about one person or one or two people. And you know, Hollywood loves the flavor of the month. But some people take that ball and run 10,000 miles with it. So, you know, I'm just hoping that that picture refutes that Highlander mentality and helps to push it away because it really is a team effort.
I subscribe to the horror movie tropes theory. There's safety in numbers.
Hey, I agree with that. Hey, I will never, man. Hey, look, I absolutely 100% agree with that. And there is safety in numbers. Sadly, not everybody sees it that way.
Well, that sounds like a conversation we need to have later, because there's a deep dive there that's...
Right. I was saying, yeah, you crossed over into the perilous land when we start talking about that stuff.
But that's okay, because there's a new podcast I'm doing called Writers After Dark, which talks about the entire creative spectrum. So I think we should have that conversation there later. So just... You know, put it down on the calendar.
Yeah, we should. And I think that we should invite some other Black creators and really have the conversation about how we internally can help, protect and foster new creators coming into the business. And the one thing I do want to say to everybody, no one's going to hire you just because. You know, mm-hmm. I know that this is a classic conversation, an old one, but no one is ever suggesting you hire somebody just because they're Black, you know, or whatever. I mean, you got to have the quality. You know, we don't have the luxury of being able to hire and promote mediocre people, because if one Black person comes along and messes up, it messes it up for everybody else for at least a couple of years, you know, and it's unfortunate. And sometimes people are set up to fail. I mean, like I said, this is a conversation we got to have, but we'll have it another time.
If people want to get a good start on it, there was a documentary. I don't know if it's still on Netflix or not. It's called Showrunners.
Yes,
they actually did a segment on that, and it broke my heart and made me laugh at the same time. The way they were describing that.
Yeah. I'm not going to go any further into it, but yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you, Brandon, for your time and your insight today.
Anytime. Like I said, I'll be happy to come back, and let's do this Black Panther Roundtable sometime soon.
We will. And we'll definitely have links to Mobile Armored Strike Command, the collections that are now out. Give that a little bump for you. And to the Vampire Hunter D novels, the first three, I'll have links to that. But we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care. I told that devil
to take you back. Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
Hey guys, this is Arjun Gupta from Sci-Fi's The Magician. You are listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
I love talking with Brandon, and I'm quite sure that the Black Panther discussion that we're setting up is going to be unreal. I can't wait for it. You guys will just have to hang on and be surprised when it shows up. But for now, we'll just have to wait our turn and get the new Vampire Hunter D. When it arrives, we'll just have to wait for it. And, well, for now, if you want to check out some of Brandon's other work, there's, as he said, the Mobile Armored Strike Command series from IDW, which is, I think, up to two volumes have been collected now, and individual issues are also still available. There are also some, what else did he work on? He did Transformers. He did a lot of work on the recent Transformers series by IDW also, and there's also Watson and Holmes, and what was the first one? Shadow Law. Duh, I should remember that one. And of course, he was in the writer's room for season two of Marvel's Agent Carter, which, damn it, I know I'm not alone in saying that that show should not have been canceled, and given what they did with the Inhumans, we should have gotten more Agent Carter, but that's a rant for a different day. Marvel is allowed to make mistakes. When they hit home runs like Black Panther and Thor Ragnarok, Yeah, okay, we can give them a couple of slip-ups on the TV side. We don't have to like it, and we can let them know we don't like it, but it's bound to happen. Law of averages. Anyway. If you have any questions or comments on Black Panther, Vampire Hunter D, or anything else that we've talked about lately, feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976. You can also leave an email. Send it to summer@sliceofscifi.com. I do my best to answer your questions. If you have questions about something specific to the show that you want to get to more people faster, you can always leave comments on the website, sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through iTunes, through Stitcher, through TuneIn, and Krypton Radio. If you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a review. All reviews help let other potential listeners know that you're enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can check us out on YouTube and on Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi on both of those platforms. And as always, there are the websites, sliceofscifi.com. As I mentioned, writersafterdark.com has a new podcast starting up. I just have to finish the changeover to HTTPS so Google doesn't penalize me. Yes, I still have a lot of work to do on a lot of websites, switching them from normal HTTP to HTTPS, but that story is for a tech podcast that I am not doing. We also have stuff on Pop Culture Geeks for all the fun stuff, television and movies that does not fit into the delicious genres of science fiction, fantasy, horror, paranormal that we find here on Slice of Sci-Fi. I want to thank everybody for your pledges through Patreon. Every dime, literally every dime you pledge goes to help keep all of this online. The media, the websites, every bit of it is a blessing. So thank you all, one and all. If you wish to make a pledge yourself, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you want to make a one-time donation, there's also a paypal.me link in the show notes. So follow that. Donate a dollar, donate $100, whatever your heart desires. I had a new idea come up for the Patreon pledges, making another level that would earn people bonuses, let's say. Not just bonus audio or bonus video, but real bonuses. Between Slice of Sci-Fi and Writers After Dark, I become the caretaker of lots of books and DVDs. And I can only run so many contests at a time before things get hairy. And I thought to myself, self, what if you gave out some of these books and some of these DVDs as bonuses for Patreon supporters? If that's something you might be interested in, send me an email, leave a comment on the website. I'm still trying to figure out how to work that. Like, does a $10 a month supporter get 3 or 4 books a year? Does a $20 a month or $25 a month supporter get 2 books and 2 DVDs a year? I don't know how I would work that. Right now, I'm collecting things, stuff I used to donate to Dragon Con, but I'm not sure that particular avenue is going to be available to me anymore, and no one from Universal Fan Con has gotten back to me about any of my questions, so I don't know if that's going to be a venue or not. I'm not even sure if I'm still going to be in the Baltimore area come April or May or June. Not sure. Which is interesting because I just found out that World Fantasy Convention is in Baltimore in November. The universe wants me to stay in Maryland a little while longer, and I don't know if I can. Anyway, that's a story for later. But if you have any thoughts on Patreon bonuses, Patreon perks for pledges, let me know. I also want to send a shout out to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for the music they have provided for the show here. If you want to check out more music by them, you can go check out their website, sci-fried.com. Their latest album, Hyperspaced, is out and available. You should go check it out and check out their videos. Their YouTube channel is highly entertaining. I recommend it. But that will do it for us for this episode. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.